Welcome to Scribe Session. Here, Inquirer Bengals beat writers Joe Reedy and Paul Daner Jr. escort you inside the walls of Paul Brown Stadium to hear the news, analysis, and observations unfolding within the team from those documenting it daily, all with the sidecar of sarcasm you've come to expect. Let's go.
Let's get ready to rumble!
He'll gun it deep downfield for A.J. Green. A.J.'s got it! Touchdown! Bengals! Dalton in the shotgun. Two receivers left, two to the right. Andy straight back to throw. Fires for Gresham in the end zone! Touchdown! Bengals! And Reedy burst up the middle of the field. Look out! Reedy's off to the races.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Hello and welcome again to Scribe Session, the Atlanta, Georgia edition, as we are here.
Georgia.
Wow. We're getting
the whole way through.
Little did you know that you were going to
get
serenaded.
Just an old sweet song with Georgia on my mind.
Wow. That was lovely. In case you didn't tell from the soft, subtle tones, that's Joe Reedy, Bengals beat writer and crooner, apparently, here. But hey, we're here in Buford, Georgia, very near the Mall of Georgia. But we're here to talk about the Bengals who are down here in Atlanta. We have flown down here, and we're at the Spring Hill Suites, surrounded by every chain restaurant you've ever considered going to in your life. But that's okay.
It's beautiful.
It is beautiful, actually. And, you know, it's been an interesting trip already down here to Georgia, which is why we had to do what, which was, I think it might be coming our thing here, Joe, is the second open. The second open song. Last week, we went with Power to the People for the Media Mutiny edition of the podcast. But this week, there's another special reason that we're going to start with a new open.
The money, yes, sir. Two for the show. A couple of years ago,
I know some of you know what that is. Maybe not all of you. Although, probably the demographic that listens to podcasts know who Outkast is.
Exactly. And you did it. I got there before you did, as I was in a Atlanta restaurant at the airport watching Dallas and what I think is the 1983 version of the Boston Breakers, Miami Dolphins new uniforms,
yes.
In the Hall of Fame game. But you had an interesting experience at baggage claim.
Well, it was unbelievable because I, you know, when I associate Atlanta as a whole, I think about Outkast because when I grew up, I mean, I was a kid growing up in the 90s, and I loved hip-hop music, and I loved Outkast. I thought they were fantastic, and I thought, and still do to this day, I think they were the best rappers ever, you know, and so I had all their early CDs. So anytime I come to Atlanta, where they're from, I always think about them. And so on the way in, I threw on my Outkast AT Aliens CD or on my iPod and listened to it on the flight in. As I'm take the tram over and I'm on my way up the escalator to go to the baggage claim, and I realize the guy in front of me is wearing overalls and a weird sort of conductor's beret and Chucks, and I kind of look to the side. And I think, man, that looks like Andre 3000 from Outkast. But what are the odds? What are the chances that that would actually be him?
Which I could go through odds or what are the odds, and you'd have better odds of that than compared to me. But no, this is a family podcast.
No, yes, family podcast. Regardless, the odds are not good.
Yes.
And but so I kind of, I'm not going to lie, I kind of creeped a bit in that I wanted to make sure. I didn't just want to randomly approach someone and just say, hey, are you from Outkast? Like, okay, how much am I going to stereotype? I'm in Atlanta. Here's this guy that kind of looks like Andre. I wanted to make sure. And so when I got a little closer, when we walked out towards the baggage claim, I realized, yes, that is absolutely Andre 3000. So I walked up to him and I said, are you Andre? And he just said, yeah. And it was, he was just the nicest, coolest guy. It was like we were old friends, chatted me up, bro-hugged me. There was a second bro-hug that occurred later. We discussed his future projects, which,
however,
by the way,
no picture.
No, he was not. That was the one thing I asked if I could get my picture taken with him, because I wanted to have proof, because I didn't think anybody would buy it. I hadn't seen you yet. I was by myself. I figured no one's going to believe that I actually ran into Andre 3000. And he said, no, I can't, because if I do one, then everybody here is going to want one. He's probably right. He was very fine with chilling and talking to whoever about talking to me. I saw him talk to a couple other people in there about whatever they wanted to talk about. He just didn't want to cause a scene. So regardless, end of the story, I end up talking with Andre 3000 for a little bit. And it was just the trip was absolutely made at that point. I could have gotten back on an airplane, flown to Cincinnati, and I would have said that was the best trip to Atlanta I've ever had. Because when you're it's everybody has that music when they were a kid, when they were a teenager, that just for whatever reason they loved it. They were always, Outkast was that for me. So to have that in Atlanta randomly was just unbelievable.
Which it would be the equivalent of me, you know, going up an escalator and going, excuse me, are you David Coverdale or Stephen Piercy? Well, damn it,
wow, easy. Are we getting more singing? Is this the crooner edition of the podcast?
It might be.
And for our younger listeners, go ahead and explain David Coverdale and Mr. Piercy.
David Coverdale, former lead singer of Whitesnake, once married to the Tawny Kitaen, who, mm-hmm. Tawny in the 80s.
She was it.
She had game.
Yeah, she was pretty much it.
And Chuck Finley had game, too, after, and, well, that's another matter. Stephen Piercy, lead singer of Rat, which Kevin Goheen and
Rat and Whitesnake were your go-tos, huh?
Well, it is hair metal, and as you've heard Kevin and Goheen and I say throughout the years, that when you put on Hair Nation on Sirius XM satellite radio, within 15 minutes there will be a Rat song, and you know they had many throughout the years.
They have, and really, when you hear things like that, that's when it all makes sense to why you're wearing black and white Zubaz pants right now, which it has to be referenced, because these aren't just any Zubaz pants. You have Super Bowl Zubaz pants, because Zubaz realized it was back and showed up at the Super Bowl and sold these pants that it looks like you have murdered a zebra and worn its hide around with a Super Bowl logo onto it. And that's fine. But, you know, at what point when you saw those did you think, I got to buy these?
Immediately when I saw them, Paul, at the Super Bowl experience.
Yes.
In fact, I bought my dad a pair, too, which he thoroughly enjoys them. I mean, they're infinitely comfortable, and, I mean, Zubaz is children of the 80s. They were just wonderful things, and I'm just thrilled and wonderful that they are back.
They are back, and they're very happy to have a customer that loves them as much as you do. There aren't many.
What would have been better, though, Paul, is if I would have worn them to practice today.
Yes.
And got my picture next to Jerome Bogger.
Yes. The ladies' man referee was in the house. That, I mean, here's the thing about today's practice in Atlanta. I promise you, it's time to talk football. Is, you know, we're down here, the joint practice between the Bengals and the Falcons, which was Monday, and then obviously Tuesday here, the second one, day off Wednesday. The game will be on ESPN at 8 o'clock on Thursday night. Yes, the season finally begins. Finally, we will have games to talk about rather than these training camp storylines.
Although, plays on a football field.
But today, there were many football plays on a football field surrounded by many football media. You had Jerome Bogger, the preeminent ladies' man referee who was there. You had every national media outlet it was represented pretty much. Pete Prisco, Jason LaCanfora, both from CBS.
John Clayton
was there in the house. No
Sirius
ponytail.
Sirius NFL Radio.
Yes, Sirius. Alex Marvez. Gil Brandt in the house. Solomon Wilcots was there.
Albert Breer of NFL Network.
Albert Breer there again. Second time seeing the Bengals this year. I mean, it was remarkable, and I think it makes sense. Most people, when they see, oh, the Bengals and the Falcons are doing a joint practice in Atlanta, what an easy way to cover both of these teams. It makes sense, but I think it also speaks to the brands of both of these teams, the Bengals being a big part of that as well, that this many national media would show up to see these.
Yeah, I mean, it's... And, I mean, this thing was booked back in April when we knew what the preseason games were going to be. This was not a, oh, hard knocks and let's do this. In fact, it took Marv to kind of convince Mike Smith, who's otherwise known in the media circles as Smitty, mm-hmm. That, you know, and I think Marv might have been secretly hoping that, no, you're not bringing cameras down here. Oh, gee, we can't do Hard Knocks now. Mm-hmm. But Smitty did agree to it. Great atmosphere at Flowery Branch. The one thing that I like that fans could see is there's that nice hill, mm-hmm. no bleachers, where you can just sit and relax. I mean, the three fields, as far as viewing points for the fans, maybe a little blocked here and there.
I got to imagine they do most of their work on that when there's only one team, when it's just the Falcons, on that field closest to the hill.
Well, I did ask one of the guys, and it's kind of, you know, don't want to word out one field out. I think that second field, you can still see stuff, but that far third field, I can also. And, I mean, they take care of their season ticket holders and VIPs by the one.
Yeah, there's rows of chairs back yes. there, and I originally thought those were for the media, and I was very excited. Oh, look, they gave us chairs undercover, and then I walked out for the practice, and they were filled with family and friends. And I said, oh, we get
no,
to go
but
stand
we,
in,
but
the,
we,
in the
but
box.
But we did get great cafeteria food today.
The lunch provided by the Falcons.
The salmon,
unrivaled.
The chicken. Nah.
Yeah, oh.
Magnifique.
Yeah, it was special. But hey, you know,
back to football.
It was an interesting day of practice. I guess what's the first thing that comes to your mind? What was the biggest thing you took from this practice?
Just one or a couple things.
Do whatever you whatever. We're rolling free. It doesn't matter.
Oh, we're rolling, baby. Roll time. Yeah. Sorry, Mike Price thing. Sorry, Bear. Bengals D-line just utterly dominated the Falcons O-line.
Yeah.
Bengals O-line, for the most part, held their own against the Falcons D-line. Zeitler with a couple rare breakdowns that I generally haven't seen. Andre Smith held his own. Kobe Hamilton and Dane Sonsenbacher and Mohamed Sanu with the injuries to the receiving core really kind of seem to hold their own today and do fine.
Yeah, we go out there, and the thing is, because of those injuries, Mohamed Sanu was the proven wide receiver on the field.
Great catch in the end zone and red zone work.
Yeah, and that's his thing. That's what it's who he is. He makes plays like that, but it's such an odd thought if you flash back to a year ago to think that you would go on a field and your one guy proven would be Mohamed Sanu. Heck, that's an odd thought a month ago. When you think about this team and where it's at. I mean, that's very much the case of where they're at is he's become one of the reliable people, and he only has played essentially three and a half, four games.
Yeah, and I think the thing is, too, is that every position, there will be that one position in training camp that will have the run of injuries. Last year we saw the secondary. This year it's receivers. But I think the one key thing to remember, too, when we're thinking who the five or six is, because I think they will just keep six.
Kept seven last year.
But I can't see him keeping seven this year. I can see nine D linemen and six receivers. Because one position, they're going to overstack, and I think D line.
Am I correct? That was the only time Marvin's ever kept seven receivers was last year?
Yeah, and only two NFL teams kept seven last year.
Yeah, it's pretty rare.
Yeah, it's extremely rare. It was my only miss in rosterology last year.
Right.
Which even though, if I wanted to do a rosterology revise at 1 p.m. that Friday, I could have and been perfect because I'd heard rumors from a couple people that they were keeping seven. But it's usually when I do rosterology, it's Friday morning about 9 or 10, the final will and testament, and that's the one I'm sticking with.
Yeah, and you don't ever, but it's an interesting thing. The wide receiver is a very interesting spot, and with all the injuries, is even more interesting this year. But you're right, I don't know that the depth is there, but the front end depth, I don't know that it warrants keeping seven again this year compared to other, there are so many other positions where you're going to have very tight roster battles with young players. That the wide receiver isn't really amongst those anymore.
Yeah, and the thing is, I think they kept Waylon last year because if he got released, he would probably be in Indianapolis today because Andrew Luck, Fleener, who was a tight end selected in the second round last year, a Stanford guy, that was basically the thing that, okay, you waive the guy, Indy was first in the waiver wire line, they would just claim him, and that would be it. Which, they kept a seven, that didn't happen. Everybody was going, oh, what? Why, Roderick McIlroy, why are you doing this? Why? I'm crooning, I'm crying, I'm running the whole gamut of emotions tonight. And McIlroy went through waivers and didn't get claimed. Came back here after the Thomas Howard injury and was gone 3 to 4 weeks later, which basically shows what the hell do we know?
Yeah.
Which we do know a certain percentage, but
not.
That's...
Well, and they were a bit saddled because they had Mohamed Sanu and Marvin Jones.
But we didn't know truly what they could do.
They just knew you couldn't drop them.
Right.
Which is my point, which was you had these extra guys that you – there was a chance that those two guys could sit inactive, every week. I mean, they didn't know.
Brandon Tate, you had to return her. You had to keep him.
They had so many guys they had to keep.
Armand Benz won.
He was the starter.
Two. Yeah.
I mean, at that point in time, he was.
Right. Armand Benz, Waylon, to me, every time I've seen him, he's the best route runner on this team because he gets it. He's played in a West Coast. He's so exact in his routes that he's basically somebody you can trust and put there. Now, I think there's better, more capable route runners this year, Sanzenbacher being one of them. You weren't going to cut Andrew Hawkins last year either.
No way.
He was your slot guy. This year, as far as the six, I mean, depending on Hawkins and the injury and everything, to me right now, Sanu and Jones are co-number twos.
Yeah.
To me, it depends first play of the game. I think 80 to 85%, Sanu's your number two. If you're going to stretch the field, then you put in Marvin Jones. Maybe put Sanu in at a quarterback, unless every defense known to man is.
Defenses might be a little more aware of his throwing ability.
Oh, hey, Sanu's in the backfield. We might want to go to nickel here or call timeout.
Yeah,
good call.
Well, and I'm really glad that we're talking this much about the receivers because I was talking with Jay Gruden a little bit about that. as well, because the Andrew Hawkins injury, which received an ominous couple of days this week, where Marvin said to us that, hey, I'm going to have to get a second opinion. Or I'm sorry, Andrew Hawkins is getting a second opinion on it. And when you asked him about if it compares similarly to the Kyle Cook injury, in that at first they didn't think it was that serious, but then revealed maybe more, and he said yes. And I think a lot of people were surprised to hear that type of honesty. And whenever you hear second opinion, you know that's because you didn't like the first one. And so very concerning news to hear. So bottom line, it doesn't sound as optimistic as we maybe originally thought. What that means, nobody really knows at this point, but we do know temporarily and probably for a little while, Andrew Hawkins is going to be out. Marvin even admitted at one point, I don't know about the opener. And that was before the second opinion thing happened. So who really knows? But I talked to Jay Gruden about what the status of that slot position would be without Andrew Hawkins. Here's some of that interview.
With Hawkins down temporarily, what are your options there? How do your options kind of run down?
You know, it's been good because James has worked with those guys and told them all they have to be interchangeable. Obviously, most of the news is an excellent slot receiver. Taylor Bug's been playing some slot. Ryan Whalen can play some slot. So we're covering the slot. Salzenbacher's had a good camp at slot. Hell, Roundtree's done some good things inside. So yeah. I think the slot's covered.
How many snaps can I make? He was fighting for snaps anyway between Tyler, Mo back, and even Geo. Geo kind of affects him too, I guess, a little bit. Yeah. As far as,
Well, Tyler's a big one. You have him and Jermaine on this field at the same time. You only have two receivers, and obviously then. But we're still going to feature the three-receiver set and the four-receiver set from time to time, and that's when they'd get their reps, but probably not as much as they had last year. But you never know. It depends how the game's going, you know, and who's doing what, and what type of personnel package we feel like is best to get after the defense.
Sanu, is he, the way he plays, almost better fit for the slot than the outside? I know he can do everything, but he seems that fits him pretty well.
It fits him. Yeah, perfectly, actually. Yeah. He's a great target. He's very smooth in there. He's a big body on the smaller nickels. I don't think there's an issue right there at all.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, Hawk's quickness and big playability will miss, but I think Mo's ready to step up and take it over. And the same with Tate. Tate's done some good things in there, too. And Salzenbacher, like I said, just goes on. They've all done some good things, but nobody's Hawk. Hawk's his own man.
Yeah.
He's his own animal, and we'll miss him when he's out.
And something that Jay said in here, I think that really sticks out to me, and I guess we knew, but to hear it confirmed is something that Mohamed Sanu is a starting slot guy. He was. And for everything that Andrew Hawkins brings you, which is a lot, he has rare qualities that nobody on this team does. Mohamed Sanu is looked at as the slot guy when they need it. And Marvin Jones would be your outside receiver in that situation. That would be your lineup. But those snaps were going to be – the slot position was being worked out of this offense significantly because of the double tight end sets. So even if you had Hawkins healthy, you would have been seeing less of him.
Well, I think you would have moved him to special teams because I remember talking to Darren Simmons before the training camp started that – I got to get him a lot more return opportunities. Mm-hmm. There was the plan to give him return opportunities in season last year, and because of the amount of snaps he played at receiver, it couldn't be done because he was a gunner on special teams too. And even some of the snaps that Darren relied on him on, he had to pull back from that. Where it almost sounds like a bad Plinko scenario because Hawkins now becomes the special teams guy. There's no room on this roster for a Brandon Tate.
Right.
But we optimistic at best, we thought Brandon Tate was a 5 or 6 guy at best. And truthfully, I do think Brandon Tate has improved as a receiver this offseason.
Mm-hmm.
But with the young talent you have, and the fact that Brandon is on a 1-year contract, that to show how much they don't know they have in him, it's a one-year veteran contract at a fifth-year veteran minimum, but the for salary cap purposes, they've used the veteran minimum allowance, which is a cap saving of about 170 to 180. They don't even know what they got.
And here's my thing, though, with Brandon Tate. He had every opportunity. This team needed a receiver last year badly to step up. They needed somebody. When Armond Bynes wasn't good enough and they were looking for somebody, they badly needed somebody, and Brandon Tate was not the answer in their minds at that time. So, and this is not a rookie. This is not a guy who is just developed. I mean, this is a guy that's been around a little bit. He had the chance to do it and couldn't do it. It makes me wonder if they're selling on Brandon Tate, where they're at with him as a guy who can be a part of an offense where you are running two tight ends. You've got AJ Green and Marvin Jones and Mohamed Sanu. Where would he even fit in there?
Yeah, I mean, that's a thing right now. And maybe
this injury may have saved him.
It may have saved him, but the one thing that I remember last year with the secondary competition, there was basically only one guy who was in every training camp practice as a corner. A guy signed the day the Bengals reported by the name of Chris Lewis Harris.
Still here.
Who made it onto the practice squad and late in the season got his way onto the active roster. Does that work for a Dane Sonsenbacher this year?
Mm-hmm.
Because let's face it, Locks, AJ, Sanu, Jones, Hawkins, jury's still out, but let's say he can get the week two in the Monday night game. That's your fourth right there. Kobe Hamilton, if he continues to play well, I think is number five because
at the very least, they're not going to cut him. I think they've seen. Think you know enough about him, and he's similar to what we were talking about earlier with last year with a guy like Marvin Jones, whoever. Who you just can't. It's you just drafted the guy at the very at the worst case scenario, you got to just stash him and have him not be active every Sunday. But because there's potential there.
Right. I mean,
he's got to be a part of the equation.
Yeah. So you got about four right there. Sonsenbacher's played well. He's got no practice squad eligibility.
You're leaving off Whalen at that point.
Yeah.
He earned it. He earned it last August, the right to stay. Him, Sonsenbacher. There's a number of guys there that could try him. It's a deep unit. I mean, it's a deep group. So you need somebody. I mean, you need somebody to assert themselves, and that's what these four preseason games are pretty much going to be for with that group, I would think.
Yeah, and this team's got a lot of depth in a lot of positions that you're going to have some teams across the league getting happy because, oh, this guy's available. I mean, D-line. There's 11 guys right now for basically 9 spots.
Could we see a trade? I mean, Clinton McDonald a couple years ago happened when they had what they felt like was too – they had extra defensive linemen, needed some help in other areas, and they got Kelly Jennings. You know, I mean, could we see something like that happen with this year?
It's possible. Yeah. I mean, I don't see it, but this team has done a good job of using trades and – acquiring or giving up draft picks.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
3 years ago, they made a trade and got Reggie Nelson. Look at what Reggie Nelson's done. I mean, he's stable at safety. We don't. I mean, I want to see what Iloka does in a game first before I'm fully convinced and on board.
Yeah, and there we are with this. The depth chart released this week. George Iloka is the most starting
overrated
safety.
Event in history.
It is the most overrated event, although for maybe one of the first times it actually kind of produced news because of George Iloka being listed as a safety. I don't think either of us, Marvin has, whenever he's done that, has always pretty much sided with the veterans and let the young guys overtake them. I guess the veteran in this case would have been Taylor Mays, which is what I assumed to be listed there. It was Iloka with Mays behind him. And by all everything we've heard from talking to Mike Zimmer, from talking to Marvin Lewis, to anybody else, that it was, you know, Iloka earned it in their eyes.
Yeah, and, you know, I think he has. And there are those guys in year one going to year two that the light really goes on. And I think with a guy like Iloka, that's happened. Now, Devin Still, talking to Zim today, I think we're still waiting. But it's one. It's just some players progress better than others, and we'll just have to wait and see.
Speaking of waiting and seeing, we have to wait and see on Ray Maluga. Who exactly is going to line up this year? But one thing we do know is that when you get Ray Maluga in the locker room, he will talk and talk, and then he'll talk. He gave a 25-minute fountain gusher this week to a cast of surrounding media. And it was really, it was the first time he's really spoken to the media this camp.
Yeah.
I mean, had,
for the most part, we've left him alone in off-season drills.
We haven't needed to. You know, Mike Zimmer came out during the luncheon day and said, hey, we brought him back because we like Ray. We need him to just – because he loves playing for this team. He loves this city, even though it doesn't always love him back. And seems to be, for the most part, this offseason didn't love him back. And he talked about that. Now, we would never we are not into torture on the Scribe Session podcast, so we will not subject you to the full 25 minutes of Ray Maluga's
There would be a lot of beeps that I would have to put in, too.
Yeah, and we just don't have that kind of time, nor technology to
go
in.
Nor energy.
No, no energy, exactly. So, but here's some of the best of the best from the Ray Maluga 25-minute therapy session that the reporters were given this week. To take a listen to some of what Ray had to say.
Parental discretion advised.
Well, did you, I mean, you're a prideful guy, and you hear what people say.
Yeah, I'm not going to sit here and say F, you know, all these other people. Like, that's not going to make me a better person, you know. I talked to Zem. I talked to Marvin. I talked to Paul, you know. I got down to the truth and told him, hey, you want me back. I mean, I understand the situation, you know, when I get there, you know, how much I'm going to play this and that, or, you know, whether I'm going to be a three down or two down. I knew everything before I even came in, so it's not like I didn't know. You know, they wanted me back, and I know I wanted to come here and prove myself. You know, just not prove myself because it was a bad year, just know that I have a lot more to offer. And
finish what you started kind of thing?
Yeah. You know, I'm not going to go to another team because, you know, I didn't feel welcome by the fans. Like, who cares? I don't care. If they could do it better than I could, they'd be in my position. So,
but
you know.
But in the end, though, was it when you got those three guys in your corner and
yeah,
behind
it,
your
it,
back,
it was a
forget
no,
what everybody
it
else
It was a no-brainer.
Does.
Like, you know, I felt like I wanted to come back.
Right.
I felt wanted. You know, I felt good at coming back. So if I would have said yes, you know, give me the contract, I'll sign it. I knew that I was going to sign it knowing that I was at ease, you know, walking into this locker room instead of like, oh, you know, what am I going to do? What's my role in this team? No, I already knew it, so.
I mean, they said you're coming back, you're going to play the same spot, right? You're going to mm-hmm. do the same thing, right? I mean,
pretty emphatic.
I think it was just a
pretty emphatic. No hesitation.
I mean, I think everybody. I mean, did that surprise? Because I think everybody just assumed they're going to move on to the middle.
Everything is about competition.
Yeah.
You know. So if I did come back knowing I was going to stay at Mike, and someone else beat me out, then hey, that's how the game goes. You know. And then I'm going to be sitting back playing special teams. You know, I made a decision. I'm here for 2 years until they cut me, and you know, I'm trying to be the best of my linebacker I can be.
Zim said he noticed a difference in you during the off-season drills.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of, I don't know the lack of phrasing, but
he saw that maybe you taking it seriously more?
It's not that I wasn't taking it seriously then. It's just I can finally break it down and go back to the basics.
Okay.
You know, and I mean, you know, it's never too late to try something. You know, so you know, I go up there and talk to him, talk to Polly. Hey, what do I need to do to get better? Every day, set a goal for yourself. What do you need to get better today? What do you need to get better today? Go out there and do it. Come back, watch film. Good job. You know, this is what you said you were going to get better at. You did it. Good job. Keep it up. Boom, boom, boom. Obviously, I'm going to get yelled at sometimes. You know, that's how it goes.
What do you need to get better?
Attention to detail. Slowing down. You know, slowing down, reading my keys, and make the plays that I'm supposed to make.
Huh. That's the, those have been the ones. I mean, it's the easy ones, I guess.
Right.
They've been the problem, right?
Yeah. You know, people say about tackling. Shit, like, obviously, work on that and make plays.
What does all this mean from Ray? Is my first question.
Number one, and I think you remember a column I wrote in January at the end of the year. I think he's starting to get it. Because I basically wrote in January, I don't think Ray Maluga knows what type of player Ray Maluga is. And you've been there throughout his speeches. In fact, you got him on a good gotcha moment last year with Trent Richardson, which he deserved.
I was not trying to get him.
Right.
I mean, it was one of those things where he said it two times to us. If you say something twice to me, I assume that you mean it.
Right.
And when you call someone a rookie unimpressive twice, I assume that you mean it.
Right. But throughout, and you know, Paul, from the time you've been here, because you came in, I think, Ray's second year, that Ray would frequently compare himself to Mr.'s Cushing and the Fabio of the NFL, Clay Matthews Jr.
They shared a Sports Illustrated cover together.
Yes.
At USC. And he was the centerpiece of that.
Right. Where people are still wondering where that guy is. Will we ever get that guy? I don't know. Probably not. But if we get a solid linebacker who's down about 245 pounds that can make a tackle in the open field, something he hasn't done in middle linebacker in 2 years, I might add. Mm-hmm. I think Willis McGahee in week two of Denver in 2011 is still running roughshod on him. I can't remember the last middle linebacker here who has covered tight ends or receivers effectively. I think he finally gets, here's the type of player I am. Here's the type of player I want to be. Here's the resources that I have to make that happen. Now let's see if we can do it. And he was a little, okay, he wasn't a little. He was a lot critical of the fans. And I've got one on Twitter who I think would blame Dusty's lineups on Ray Maluga. He didn't play well last year. We all admit that. But you got to take those grades with a certain amount of salt, too, even though a lot of us use them to kind of get our hypotheses through and all that.
No doubt about it. It's going to be interesting to see how it turns out because he feels – if you look at this defense, it seems to be that position is the only one you really have a question mark about. I think people are – the safety position, obviously, you look at that and you wonder who's going to win it. But I think they're pretty excited about the guys they have there. It's the one guy who you need to take a step that would be considered unlikely. Whereas a young guy coming in and stepping up at the safety position wouldn't be a crazy thought. Guys develop and show up all the time. The other guys are all proven, all across line, all 11 positions. But that is the one position where you need somebody to play significantly better than they did the year before and that they've been proven to be by the back of their football card, so to speak. So we'll see what happens with that. I want to wrap us up here, taking a few Twitter questions, which is always a fun thing that you like to do. And when we every time we go to the Twitter, there's only one thing that we can really think of whenever we go to Twitter. And James Harrison will tell you what that is.
Pain in the double A-S-S.
James Harrison's right, isn't he, Joe? Occasionally.
He is.
But we love the fans.
We do.
We do love the fans. So that's why.
Okay, we do.
That's what we're going to go with.
We love the fans.
We love the fans. But let's go Twitter question to @richdvm1, who had maybe my favorite Twitter question of the week. Do you think we keep Quinn Sharp on the practice squad? To those listening who don't know who Quinn Sharp is, he is the backup punter kicker who I believe during was here during the mini camps, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Lucky mini camp.
He was the one who, as scribes, we stand on the sidelines during these practices, and we normally, when special teams go on, we talk to each other and we don't really pay attention. We had to start paying attention because his punts were going all. We were honestly concerned for getting hit over the head with some of these. He hasn't exactly been the greatest. But so let's answer the question. Do you think we keep Quinn Sharp on the practice squad?
Oh dear God, no. If you're keeping a punter or kicker on a practice squad, you got to get your frickin' head examined.
Yeah.
why did you even choose this question for me to ask, knowing that you were going to get a reaction like this from me? Come on, man.
That's why we choose that question, because I want to get the reaction out of you, Joe.
It's basically like me wearing these pants on the Serengeti, ready to
chase down the zebra and watch the gazelle come after you.
Yes.
Because they assume that you are one, as they should. Let's move on. From @OhioBrian, he asks, is AJ Green's injury worse than we originally thought?
No. As we are taping this, this is day 11 of the rehab. He missed 10 days due to the hyperextension. In terms of regular season and stuff, I mean, it's a preseason. You know what AJ Green can do.
But there's I mean, he's walking around fine.
Yeah.
It's not like he's on crutches or he's limping and unable to bend. He seems to be fine, but it's just why take any chances at this point?
It's a preseason, which, you know, it's like Allen Iverson in practice. It's preseason. We're talking about preseason. Preseason. We're talking about preseason. Not just preseason, but game one of preseason, which going back to our Twitter fans, Brandon Sosna, good friend of the program, who will make more money than us because he's a student at the University of Penn. Kevin Coyle, who we all enjoyed here from his time at the Bengals, the assistant coach, now Miami's defensive coordinator,
yep,
tweeted a photo because him and Brandon and Kevin Coyle's daughter went to high school together at Sycamore. Big shout out to Sycamore and all you folks out there.
The Aves.
Yes. Where Kevin's daughter was kind of going, I keep telling him about these matchups and stuff, where I'm kind of saying, it's the Hall of Fame game, which for all of y'all who live in Kentucky, to me, the Hall of Fame game is the equivalent of week zero high school football in Kentucky. It's like scrimmages in Ohio. In
jamborees, if
yes,
you will.
It's week zero. And Miami went 0-4 in the preseason last year and got off to a pretty darn good start for that matter. So, you know, it's kind of wait and see.
No doubt about it.
Did I answer that question?
You did answer that
question. Okay, I went roundabout.
The bottom line was, AJ's Green injury is exactly what everybody thought it was. He looks fine. No one is taking any chances with him because there's absolutely no reason to. AJ Green could sleep inside of a cave entire offseason, wake up, show up at Soldier Field, and catch eight balls for 150 yards with two touchdowns.
He's hyperbaric just, chamber, Paul.
I'm sorry. Yes.
I mean, T.O. and Chad used hyperbaric chambers.
But... No, Lavernius Coles did.
Oh, that's right.
Chad made fun of him for using... For those of you into Hard Knocks trivia,
Lavernius still gets nightmares over that Be a Pro speech.
Oh, a classic moment. I hope that we get something of that ilk. I'm sure we will when Hard Knocks premieres Tuesday night at 10 o'clock on HBO for all of you that are stealing it for a month. Last Twitter question, and we'll try to go out on this. From at Charles James 1, with 20 questions and the season starting, your relatively famous / notorious Twitter exercise, does this mean we can go to the Marvin Facepalm avatar again? Is the Marvin Facepalm avatar going to come back this season?
It is not in the form that it was last year because a couple people with the organization, it took them a while, but they finally discovered the Marvin Facepalm avatar and was wondering, is that appropriate or not? So now I have my wonderful dog Ruby with showing off her pearly whites, which is either a yawn or her about to bite someone's head off. It's, you know, it's up to individual interpretations, Paul.
Yes.
If, and I hate to use a third person, if Joe is tweeting in a nice manner, it's the dog yawning. If Joe is tweeting in a condescending, as I can be at time, or sarcastic manner, or in a manner of when you ask me if punters or kickers are going to make the practice squad, for Pete's sakes, that's when Ruby shows her teeth and wants to bite somebody's head off.
Yes. At one point, you went to the angry, despicable me character, didn't you?
I did.
And that was when you were in a very special angry place.
That was 2010, Paul, in the midst of a 10-game losing streak. A lot of us were in deep, angry places. But yeah. Now for those special questions that deem special answers, Paul, I have been using the gif of the minion saying no.
Yes, that is true. Now, Despicable Me 2 is out now, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so you need to – have you seen it?
I have not yet. You need to go out
and see it. And you need to bring a connection of that maybe onto your Twitter stream.
I'm kind of thinking maybe Wednesday night, movie night.
Me and you going to watch a cartoon movie together? Is this what you're recommending?
You know, if you want to go watch Pacific Rim or something, I watched Pacific Rim before camp started. And, you know, it's kind of like me building that 500-foot wall and seeing the Koji just keep battering it down and me having to get in a Jaeger and beat the crap out of something. And
well, listen, I will say this. All of you, please check back next week for Scribe Session to see how date night went on Wednesday night in Atlanta when apparently we go to see cartoons and other odd indie films together. No, but hey, we lots going on here in Atlanta. Obviously, practice is going to go on again on Wednesday from 3 to 5. The game, first preseason game, is going to be Thursday.
Without Hard Knocks debut.
Hard Knocks debuts. Without doubt, there will be plenty to talk about next Tuesday when we come back for the next edition of Scribe Session. But for now, it is time for... myself and the Zubaz Pants to retire, and we will bring it back here next week, and we'll fill you in on everything else that's going on. Make sure you keep checking us out at Cincinnati.com. We'll have the live streams going, we have the blog going, we have the traditional media stories going, and we have the...
Look at you using a doc phrase.
I mean, yes, absolutely. That's what it is. It is the print edition will still show up on a few people's doorsteps, for a little while, hopefully.
Yeah.
And we'll be in pretty much every medium that you could imagine. We'll keep bringing it to you. But for now, we shall sign off.
So long, on this farewell, alvitas, and goodbye.
There's it's really the only way we could possibly go out. So have a good one from Atlanta.
Georgia, Georgia, the whole day through, just an old sweet song keeps Georgia on my mind.
Georgia on my mind.
I said, Georgia, Georgia, a song of you,
a song of
comes
you,
as sweet and clear as moonlight through the pines. Other arms reach out to me, other eyes smile tenderly. Still in the peaceful dreams I see, the road leads back to you. I said, Georgia, oh, Georgia, no peace I find, just an old sweet song keeps Georgia on my mind. Other arms reach out to me, other eyes smile tenderly. Still in peaceful dreams I see, the road leads back to you. Whoa. Georgia, no peace I find, just an old sweet song keeps Georgia on my mind.
Georgia,
I said just an old sweet song.